Welcome to Perspectives by John Pierce here on WDIY 88.1 FM, Allentown. And we say right away, Merry Christmas to everybody. Bill, how do we say that in Pennsylvania German?
Freilich Christtag.
My guest this evening is Dr. William Donner, who is a professor at Kutztown University, and one of his many interests is Pennsylvania Germans. So that's our topic for this evening. William Donner has a Bachelor of Arts degree with honors in anthropology from Haverford College and a PhD in the Department of Anthropology from Penn. Now he teaches at Kutztown, and his areas of interest, get this list, social organization, family, Polynesia, Pennsylvania Germans, culture change and modernization, language and culture, anthropology and education, heritage studies, and public culture. Well, Bill, we're not going to be able to cover all those in the next half hour.
I should have shortened that up before I sent it to you. There's a lot of overlap in those areas.
The reason that we're going to talk about Pennsylvania Germans this evening is that I ran into Dr. Bonner at the Lehigh Valley Heritage Museum, where he gave a talk on Pennsylvania Germans. So that's our focus this evening. And let's give a shout out to the folks over at the Heritage Museum. And thanks for their series of talks that they give on Saturdays frequently at 1 p.m. So, Professor Bonner, how did you become interested in the Pennsylvania Germans? And you say Germans / Dutch.
Yeah. Right,
explain that to us.
Okay, maybe I'll start with that. It's Donner, like the reindeer, though, so for the Christmas spirit. Well, there's some controversy about that. Who exactly to include in Pennsylvania, Germans or Pennsylvania Dutch, and what exactly is the preferred moniker name for them. And I have to say, one of the things, when I write about Pennsylvania Germans or Pennsylvania Dutch, oftentimes it takes me a page or two to explain all the ins and outs of who to include amongst the Pennsylvania Dutch or Germans and why they're two terms, Pennsylvania German, Pennsylvania Dutch. They're both the same people, but there's some controversy about which is the preferred term. The ancestors came from the southwestern part of what is now Germany before Germany was a nation. And they came over in mainly in the 1700s to mainly the eastern seaboard, mainly southeastern Pennsylvania, into this region, and they settled. And the controversy comes from the fact the ancestors came from Germany, but what is now Germany, but they aren't really in many respects German. Their language is one of the Germanic languages, but Germany didn't exist as a nation then, and, you know, there's an allegiance to some extent, some heritage from that region, but they don't necessarily consider themselves German in the ways in which other people coming from Germany in the 1800s and 1900s did. The Dutch seems to be a term that was being used by the English to refer to anybody who spoke a German language, and that would have included people in Holland, the Dutch, and that would have included people in what is now Germany. And, you know, Don Yoder, who's really a leading scholar, he's passed away now, but leading scholar of Pennsylvania Dutch or Germans, he thought that Pennsylvania Dutch was the preferred term, and he argued that many of the English would have been using that term Dutch here in the United, in what was became the United States. They would have been using Dutch to refer to the people who we now know as Pennsylvania German, Pennsylvania Dutch. Now, there's some controversy about which is the preferred term. So Yoder preferred Pennsylvania Dutch. For a while, I was on the board of an organization called the Pennsylvania German Society, founded in 1891. And when they were founded in 1891, there was a debate about whether it should be the Pennsylvania German Society or the Pennsylvania Dutch Society. And generally, Pennsylvania German is preferred by people who know Standard or High German. Pennsylvania Dutch is actually a different language. Pennsylvania German is preferred by wealthier people. The Pennsylvania German Society, which actually has produced an awful lot of good academic works about the Pennsylvania Germans, they were made up mainly of doctors, lawyers, businessmen. They went with Pennsylvania German. But if you go in the neighborhoods in Lehigh County and Berks County, almost everybody talks about Pennsylvania Dutch. They'll use the word, we're Dutch. And so the common people, the ordinary, hardworking people, tend to prefer Pennsylvania Dutch. And there's some controversy there. You know, it can get a little nasty, actually, about whether Pennsylvania German is preferred or Pennsylvania Dutch. But they're the same group of people. And the confusion comes, the Pennsylvania German side is, well, we don't want people to think we're about clogs and windmills and from Netherlands. Our ancestors may have gone through Netherlands to get here, but they were not really, many of them did not come from that region. And then the other side is, well, our ancestors came, many of them, actually from parts of France and parts of Switzerland and parts of Germany before Germany was a nation. And they were called Dutch, and let's keep calling them Dutch. And it's just you rich, snotty people who want to call them Pennsylvania German. So that's a controversy. I actually generally use Pennsylvania German. I'm at the Pennsylvania German Cultural Heritage Center, which is a wonderful organization at Kutztown University for the study of Pennsylvania Germans or Pennsylvania Dutch. The Kutztown Folk Festival, which was founded in 1950, was originally the Pennsylvania Dutch, Kutztown Pennsylvania Dutch Folk Festival. And the founders, which include Don Yoder and another person, Alfred Shoemaker, who were leading scholars of Pennsylvania German, they were adamant Pennsylvania German was wrong. It should be Pennsylvania Dutch. So wow. You can use both.
Sorry,
took a long time to explain it. And just imagine how long it takes when I'm writing, because if I'm writing for other scholars, they'll get it all mixed up. And another confusion is they'll assume that I'm talking about the Old Order Amish. But the Pennsylvania Germans are much, many more people than just the Old Order Amish. So that includes another page or two to explain.
Yes, sir. I grew up in the Chicago area. And so as I heard the term Pennsylvania Dutch, I never heard the term Pennsylvania Germans. So, of course, I thought they were from the Netherlands originally.
That's exactly the problem. So there's a lot of confusing things, and that does cause some confusion.
Right. And you said that some of these folks did not come from the southwestern part of what is now Germany. Some of them did come from the Netherlands?
Some of the ancestors may have gone through the Netherlands. Unlikely they came from what is now the Netherlands. Some of them came from France. Some of them came from Switzerland. I think they probably went into the southwestern part of Germany because, you know, a lot of wars going on then, mainly between Protestants and Catholics. Pennsylvania Germans are on the Protestant side. And so they would have gone to those areas where the ancestors of the Pennsylvania Germans were living, a region called the Pfalz or the Palatinate.
Okay.
And then come over here.
Some from Switzerland and some from France.
Yeah. And that's another argument. You know, why do you call us Pennsylvania Germans when our ancestors came from other places? You're trying to limit who our ancestors
Difficult
are.
To hone in on that. What do you think is the most interesting part of the Pennsylvania Germans?
That's a very good question. I think, you know, if you talk to many people on the street, one of the interesting aspects is that group of people who we know as Old Order people, the Old Order Amish and the Old Order Mennonites. Now, they're only probably less than 5% of the people who are actually Pennsylvania German, but they have preserved a distinctive way of life in Lancaster and a few now are in Berks. They don't really not use modern technology, but they filter it. And so, you know, that would be one group of people to look at who they're the one group that has preserved the Pennsylvania Dutch language. They are, I think, to be admired for their ability to preserve a community which is structured around religion and community and family. And that's what they want to preserve as they think about what modern technology to use. Now, the other 95% are people who are mainly Protestant, German Reformed and Lutheran. The German Reformed Church is now the United Church of Christ. Those are really the overwhelming majority of people who settled in this area. Spoke Pennsylvania Dutch, had Pennsylvania German folk practices. And over the last, 50, 75 years, they did keep their language for about 200 years, but over the last 50, 75 years, most of those people no longer speak the Pennsylvania German language. But what I think is really interesting about them is starting about 1750, 1780, as their language formed, from some related dialects of German that were spoken in the southwestern part of Germany. They preserved that language for about 200 years. Most immigrant groups assimilate rapidly, and they lose the language. Italian Americans, Irish Americans, Poles, Russians, Usually it's three generations and the language is gone. The Pennsylvania Germans preserved their language, and they preserved a distinctive culture here in the United States. And I think that's really fascinating. They started developing different ways to express their heritage, and I think that's really cool. The language was not written. And in 1800, if you came to this area, if you were in Allentown, I think all the newspapers, church services would have been in, actually in High German, not Pennsylvania Dutch, but in High German. Pennsylvania Dutch and High German are somewhat different. By 1900, all those newspapers and church services, most of the church services, some still would have been in High German, most of them would have been in English. Probably all the newspapers were in English. Somewhere in the middle of the 19th century, middle of 1800s, the Pennsylvania Dutch started writing in their own language. It was not a written language. They would use High German, but they started writing poetry and then some humorous stories. So by 1900, just about every newspaper in this area would have been in English but had a Pennsylvania Dutch column. And to me, this is fascinating because it's the creation of culture. It's the creation of heritage. And in a sense, something that became an innovation became a way to express something about tradition. And I think that's really cool.
Now, the Lehigh Valley is on the really the eastern swing of this area where the
maybe Northampton County has a few. They have some Dutchy parts to them, but yeah.
And in the morning call, I remember years ago, I arrived in the Lehigh Valley in 1970.
Yeah.
In that decade of the 70s, I remember there was a column in the morning call, Pennsylvania German.
Yeah. No, that would have been. Those columns would have been common until about 2000. The children born after 1950 really didn't learn Pennsylvania Dutch, and you just don't have the number of people who can speak or attempt to write in Pennsylvania Dutch. But it would have been very common in this area for the newspapers to be in English in 1900 and even throughout the 1900s and then have a Pennsylvania Dutch column. Now, there's one more thing I have to talk about that's close to my heart. World War I came along, and the Pennsylvania Germans kind of laid low. They had nothing to do with Germany, but that word German, that was actually a problem in my youth, too, that I had German ancestors. I was not happy about that growing up in the 1950s. That was not good. But anyway, in the late 1920s and 1930s, it was this energy kind of building up. And you started finding the Pennsylvania Dutch writing plays in the Pennsylvania German language. I'm using Pennsylvania Dutch and Pennsylvania German interchangeably. Groundhog Lodge meetings, I don't know if you've heard about those.
I have, yes.
The Groundhog Lodges started being founded. The first one started off in 1929 and 1930. And what you started finding was people would come together and only speak in Pennsylvania Dutch. If you spoke any English, you were fined for it. They would have plays in Pennsylvania Dutch that have really speeches about the good qualities of Pennsylvania Germans and Pennsylvania Dutch that sing My Country, 'Tis of Thee in Pennsylvania Dutch. It would really be all in Pennsylvania Dutch. And eventually, you got 18 recognized, but there were more Groundhog Lodges. Those were actually for men only. And then you had things called Versammelings, which were similar gatherings where you could only speak Pennsylvania Dutch throughout this area. And I think there might have been 60 or 70 of these, and they would meet annually. And those were pretty strong, again, until about 2000. And that was another case where you had the creation of a tradition and something that was, innovative in the 1920s and 30s. It became something that was a part of tradition by the 1950s and 1960s.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back talking about Pennsylvania Germans or Dutch. You can use either term, according to Professor William Donner, who teaches a course at Kutztown University on the Pennsylvania Germans. Now, in the catalog at the university, do you call it Pennsylvania German?
Yeah, it's actually, academic institution. Kutztown University actually was founded in 1866 as an institution to teach Pennsylvania Germans. That was the state legislator set it up as the normal school or It became a state teachers college for the region. It included Schuylkill County, Lehigh County, and Berks County. But it was really set up kind of pork barrel politics of the 1800s for Pennsylvania Germans. When our more present iteration in the 1990s, when we got a farmhouse and we set up the Pennsylvania German Cultural Heritage Center, most of the people involved were academic, wealthier people, and so they went with Pennsylvania German. So we teach a Pennsylvania German Studies course. We have a Pennsylvania German Cultural Heritage Center. Sometimes, haven't recently, but we do teach the Pennsylvania German language. But when we're amongst ourselves, we oftentimes use Pennsylvania Dutch, and there's, you know, some,
as
I guess, a little
term.
Tension about, should it be Pennsylvania Dutch or Pennsylvania German? The people in the area, almost all of the salt of the earth, hardworking farmers and working people, they'll use Dutch.
Right. And tell us about the Heritage Center.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll be happy to. The Heritage Center was founded in the early 1990s. There was a farmstead, and there was also a classic Pennsylvania, it's actually a Pennsylvania German barn, which has a ramp. It's called a bank barn, and then there's an overhang on the other side. And it's a very distinctive style that you'll find in this area and where Pennsylvania Germans went. They moved a one-room schoolhouse to the site as well. And then we also got an endowment for my position as a chair of Pennsylvania German Studies. And we started building. I don't know, Dave Valeska was the original Freiberger chair, and he started building a real foundation there for Pennsylvania German Studies.
Is this near the campus?
It's on the campus.
It's on the campus.
Yeah, it's an old farmhouse that was actually right adjacent to the campus. So we're lucky there. The present director is a person named Patrick Dunmoyer. He's been there over 10 years. He does a fantastic job of having exhibits, opening up different kinds of events. I think at this point, we're really the center for academic and also the expression of Pennsylvania German culture.
So if folks wanted to go visit, how would they get in touch with the center?
What I would do is just go online and Google Pennsylvania German Cultural Heritage Center at Kutztown, see what the different events are. You'd have to call ahead if you wanted to actually go inside the center, but we do have different days where we have specific events. We have Christmas on the farm, and then periodically we have other special events for people. We do have tours, but right now, because of staffing and things like that, it's not really open all the time. I would call ahead, and what Patrick Dunmoyer is planning on doing is setting aside maybe one day a month or 2 days a month when people can come visit.
Excellent.
Also, we have a great website with a lot of interesting materials. If you go to the website of the Heritage Center, he's digitized some of his exhibitions.
Again, the website would be?
Pennsylvania German Cultural Heritage Center.
Okay.
And you could do it at Kutztown University. If you do that, I'm almost sure your first hit will be that. If you did Pennsylvania German and Kutztown, it'd probably be either the first or second or third, somewhere down there.
Okay. What are the important contributions of Pennsylvania Germans to American life?
Okay.
I like this question.
Yeah, good question. Again, to me, one of the contributions they made was they proved that an immigrant ethnic group could preserve their language and a distinctive folk culture over several centuries. And I think, you know, that's actually an overlooked contribution that people don't really appreciate the way in which they could do that. One of the contributions, I think, is their farming. They were hardworking farmers and very successful farmers. And I think, you know, there's some argument, I don't know if I would agree, that the Pennsylvania Germans were the hardest working farmers. They certainly were hardworking. They did contribute to our society in that way. They also contributed as, early European settlers. They would have made up about a third of the population of Pennsylvania through the 17 into the 1800s, into about the time of the Civil War. And so our national projects, the Revolutionary War, they were actually generally with the revolutionaries. A lot of the English actually supported the king, including Ben Franklin's own son. But the Pennsylvania Germans were on that side, and they would have been part of what I see as an American project throughout the 17 and 1800s. So I think that's now. I don't know if you want to talk about holidays, but a lot of our holiday traditions actually come from Pennsylvania Germans. So there is that contribution as well.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this holiday, which is Christmas.
Yeah.
What do they have a certain grumpy old character.
Belsnickel.
Yeah.
Well, let me first talk about some of the things like the Christmas tree seems to be from the Pennsylvania Germans. And as I was telling you, we're you know, in Bethlehem, the Puts, there was a Moravian minister, Roy Ledbetter, who wrote a nice article about the Puts itself seems to have come from the Moravians. And they're, I guess you can consider them, many consider them Pennsylvania German. That came from them, seems to have been developed here. So the Christmas tree seems to be, from what we can tell, again, something from Pennsylvania Germans. You start seeing Christmas trees really common in southeastern Pennsylvania before it became common other places. And there was a Muhlenberg, I don't know, Muhlenberg College. He was from a famous Pennsylvania German family. Apparently, he had a Christmas tree in New York City, which again increased the popularity. Now, what you're talking about is Belsnickel. And you don't see Belsnickel much anymore. Now, Belsnickel does, if you go to Christmas on the farm, which is usually the first Saturday in December, if you go to the Heritage Center at Kutztown, Patrick Dunmoyer does a fantastic Belsnickel. Belsnickel was kind of a mean person who would come around at Christmas. And my mother said her grandfather talked about Belsnickel. If you talk to older people, if you read accounts, pretty common to have somebody in the neighborhood come around. He would dress in furs, put on black paint, and he'd have a whip, and he'd be kind of mean. He'd go up to the kids and say, "Have you been good?" And he'd whip down and whip against them and kind of scare them. And then after a while, he'd throw them some candy or nuts. I have to say, Dunmoyer's Belsnickel is one of the best I've ever seen. But Dunmoyer, who is one of the nicest people in the world, when he does his Belsnickel, he can get all his meanness out for the year. So, and I heard a couple people tell me, you know, that they were upset their father would be Belsnickel, and, you know, it would kind of affect them how mean their father could be as Belsnickel and then get nice. I talked to some school teachers in the one-room schools. Sometimes they'd hire somebody to come in as Belsnickel. This would be the 1930s and 40s. I think somebody told me actually in Topton, which is not too far from Kutztown, there was a Belsnickel who came around, I think, when she was young. That would have been maybe 1980s, 1990s, something like that. But it's pretty rare at this point to have a Belsnickels. But, you know, from all the families I've heard back, you know, up until the 30s or 40s, it was pretty common to have somebody, usually somebody from the town who would go around and
Well, we think about Santa Claus being a jolly person. In fact, he's my favorite character out there in popular culture.
Right.
Because anytime you see Santa, you're likely to say, "Hi, Santa," or you smile.
Yeah.
And, you know, great stuff.
Yeah.
Well, what's this with Belsnickel? Why do we have to have somebody who whips children?
I can't fully unpack that. Apparently, there were some European customs where they had this. Was it Grumpschwa or something like that? There were some other things. I don't know. I know lots of times, you know, being an anthropologist, sometimes what cultures do is put up something really bad or you're not really supposed to do to show you what you're supposed to do and what's really good to make the contrast. I just Belsnickel actually became really popular. I don't know if you ever watched the Office series.
Yes.
But Dwight would be your Belsnickel.
He would be the Belsnickel.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Now, that Scranton's a little bit north for where the Belsnickel might have been, but I guess whoever did the producers thought, okay, we'll mix the Belsnickel in. But you know, Dwight's the kind of guy I think. He's kind of a jerk, so we know what not to be. And maybe that was one of the ideas of Belsnickel.
That's interesting. Other holidays of the Pennsylvania Germans?
Well, as I said, probably the Easter Bunny seems to have been something that would have been brought in by Pennsylvania Germans. Other people had decorated eggs, but the Pennsylvania Germans would have had decorated eggs at Easter as well. One of the things is Fasnacht Day. Now, I don't know,
yeah,
Donut
sure.
Day, if you know Fasnacht Day.
Yeah.
That would have been a real Pennsylvania German. Now, it's really the same thing as Mardi Gras, you know, the day before Lent. So other cultures had that. But the Fasnacht is a particular Pennsylvania German custom. Christmas itself, you know, these holidays have an evolution, a history to them, and Christmas itself has evolved over time. It wasn't, you know, that at the Last Supper Jesus said, okay, this fat guy's going to come down the chimney and bring you gifts. It was something that was created over time. And in the early days of the Republic and colonial times, there was actually debate about Christmas. I know I had some Quakers in my family. They didn't want to celebrate Christmas.
Yes,
they did
exactly.
not think that should be celebrated.
Right. Right.
Pennsylvania Germans, the German Reformed and Lutheran, thought, yeah, yeah, we want to have Christmas. And so our Christmas holiday, to some extent, was because that faction, Pennsylvania, the Lutheran, the German Reformed, I think the Episcopals were for Christmas. That faction won out, and Christmas became a huge holiday.
Right.
Thanksgiving is a holiday, again, that has evolved over time. I think Washington had a National Day of Thanksgiving, and I think it was probably with Lincoln where he tried to standardize it in November. And then Roosevelt did something, I think, to try to give us a longer time to buy for Christmas because there was a depression and he wanted, I think he changed the date a little
bit. FDR was the one who said the fourth Thursday of November.
I think the idea was to create some time between then and Christmas. But there was a harvest home festival the Pennsylvania Germans had that was somewhat different, and it could happen between August and maybe October. And you brought different vegetables, fruits, garden things to the church, and you put them up on the altar, and you kind of celebrated that as the harvest time. And my understanding is in the early 1900s, there was some controversy among Pennsylvania Germans kind of resisted Thanksgiving as a holiday. They wanted to have their own holiday, and so they kept the harvest home holiday. But now, you know, they're all now some churches, I think, still celebrate harvest home as part of their kind of heritage or tradition. But this region, of course, Thanksgiving is a big holiday.
Bill, if our listeners want to learn more about Pennsylvania Germans, their culture, their language and whatnot, where would they go?
I would go to the Heritage Center. I would do that. There's an awful lot online. You remember I was looking up some words online when we were here. There's an awful lot of resources that are online if you put in Pennsylvania Germans. A lot of them, to be tell you, in my view, are sketchy, but the Heritage Center has some good materials. If you put in Pennsylvania German Dutch, I have a website of my own at Kutztown University on the Research Commons that you could look at. Two books I would recommend if we have time. Mark Loughton wrote a book, and he's a Pennsylvania Dutch advocate, Pennsylvania Dutch, and then : The Story of an American Language. Because Pennsylvania Dutch, it's derived from Germany, but it is an American language. It was founded here by mushing together different dialects of German. And then the other one is Pennsylvania Germans, an Interpretive Encyclopedia. That's by a man named Simon Bronner and Josh Brown. Both those books are published by Johns Hopkins Press, and so they're both good sources to start. They're big textbooks, but they're very good sources. But the Internet will have a lot of resources. I would start with the Heritage Center, I think.
Bill, thank you so much for all this information about Pennsylvania Germans today. Our time is up.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here.
It's fun. So this is Dr. William Donner, who teaches, among other things, about Pennsylvania Germans at Kutztown University. So, folks, good to have you with us on this Christmas day. And once again, in Pennsylvania German,
Freilich Kreistag.
To you all. I'm John Pierce. Until we meet again, remember to be gentle with your neighbor.